Matthew records for us Jesus taking the disciples up to Caesarea Philippi. And I've mentioned this passage before, but he has them overlook Philippi. He has them overlook Caesarea. And Caesarea, named after Caesar, is a very pantheistic place. He asked the disciples, who do the people say the Son of Man is? And really, he gets a compliment on this. They say, well, some say John the Baptist. Others, Elijah or Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. Jesus turns the question and says, but who do you say that I am? And Peter gives this just overwhelming response. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And it's based upon that confession of who Jesus is the Christ, that Jesus turns to Peter and says, I'm going to build my church, my assembly, my gathering on this rock. Now, I tell you that because what happens right after that confession? You see, Jesus tells the disciples that he is going to go to Jerusalem, and there he is going to be betrayed and killed at the hands of the leaders, the religious leaders. And on the third day, he's going to be raised again. All of this in this section. And then we come to verse 22. I want you to hear verse 22. And Peter took him aside. Go ahead and hit that next slide. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Just stop for a moment. Anybody got the guts to rebuke Jesus? I don't. I'm just not there. Okay. The relationship that Peter has with Jesus, the relationship that he sees him as someone so wonderful and yet so familiar. And remember, he just told Jesus, you, Peter was doing the talking, you are the Christ, the Messiah. So, and Jesus said, well, I'm going to go to Jerusalem, I'm going to die, I'm going to die at the hands of sinful men, on the third day I'm going to be raised. Peter pulls him aside and he says, far be it from you, Lord. This shall never happen to you. Let me just rephrase that. Peter is saying, Jesus, you got the wrong idea of the Messiah. That's what Peter's doing here. Peter pulls Jesus aside to teach him the way more perfectly. Could you imagine just the audacity to do that? Okay. And he says, you can't go to Jerusalem. You can't die. I don't even know if he even heard, comprehended, I'll be raised on the third day. I don't know that Peter gets that. But as we begin, look at the next verse. But he turned, that's Jesus, but he turned and he said to him, get behind me, Satan. Again, just stop for a moment. Jesus is not calling Peter Satan. Be mindful of your text. Jesus is saying, Peter, what you just said is of Satan. Get behind me, Satan, and look at the reason why. You are a hindrance to me. I'm not convinced Jesus wanted in the flesh to go to the cross. And it is as though Peter is saying there's an alternative somewhere. This won't happen to you. Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. You're a hindrance to me. For you are not setting, he's talking to Peter, you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man. Peter, you miss the point because you're thinking as a person and you're not thinking the way God thinks. You have set your mind on humanity, on human will and desire. Did Jesus want to go to the cross? No, I really don't believe he wanted to do that. He was willing to do that. And so he challenges Peter and he says, you've got to change the way you think. You have to reframe the circumstance that you are in. And you've got to decide, in this circumstance that I am in, what is God's will and what is man's will? They don't always intersect. And it's really easy in our circumstances to go to man's will instead of God's will. It starts with how you make your decisions. And this is a challenging lesson to me because I want to always have God's will in my heart and in my mind. I want to know his will. I want to do his will. But now Jesus is saying, you've got to think, not just like God, you've got to place your mind on that which is godly. So we come to the text that I really want to spend a little bit of time with today. And we're going to spend more than just a couple of verses. In Philippians chapter 4, I'm going to begin with verse 6. Philippians 4, verse 6. Paul says, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your heart and your minds in Christ Jesus. So this is the focal point of where we're going to be today. Don't be anxious. Okay, every time an angel shows up to a righteous person, every time to my, I could be wrong, but I believe I'm correct on this. Every time that an angel shows up to a righteous person, you know what the angel has to say? Do not be afraid. Just got to start there, okay? Because when something as great as an angel of God shows up, it does bring some fear, some anxiety. Paul is writing this letter when he is in prison. He is writing to Christians who have gone through persecution. He's writing to a church, by the way, if you just look at the beginning of chapter 4, he's writing to a church where two prominent people, and yes, they are women, but two prominent people within the church are having a major disagreement with each other. You think that makes for an uncomfortable Sunday? You know, you come to church and you've got, oh, I wouldn't even begin to say two prominent women in this church. I get in major trouble, but you just, whoever is in your head right now, okay? So they're battling it out every Sunday when you come to church. That's the audience Paul has. That's the audience he says, I don't want you to be anxious about anything. Here's what you need to do. I want you to take everything to God in prayer. Isn't that a song we sing? What a friend we have in Jesus. Taking it all to him in prayer. He says, cast your anxiety, put your anxiety, pray to him. And then we get this phrase, verse 7. I love this. And the peace of God. And here's why I like this verse. Because it doesn't say the peace from God. There is a difference, by the way. This is God Himself, His holiness, His peace guards your heart and your mind. You see, I can get through the anxiety. I can get through the difficulty. I can get through the hardship. Not because I'm a really good person. Not because I've got all my ducks in a row. But because God's peace guards my heart. It shelters over me. So he says, this peace which God gives surpasses all understanding. All understanding. Whose understanding? Your understanding. You know what I love about not being God? I don't have to know everything. I really like that. Because I don't know everything. So it's pretty easy for me to not be God. But sometimes I have to ask, why? God, I don't get it. I don't understand why you are doing what you are doing. And I can tell you, when I have that question in my heart, because I'm sure you never do, but when I have that question in my heart, anxiety starts creeping up inside of me. Because I want to know the why. You know, my grandmother, she was 96. She passed away last week. I was able to go over and do her funeral. But I spent some time with my dad. Carrie and I stayed with my dad. He's just not in good shape. And yes, he has a cancer. And yes, it's taking a toll on his body. And yes, Mom died many years ago. But do you ever ask why? The preacher from Goodell, from Hanover, called me and said, would you lead singing for Jerry's funeral on Wednesday? I said, yeah, I'll help out, whatever you want. But do you ever ask why? And Paul comes back and says, that's the wrong question. Because the why is trying to seek a human wisdom. And it will never get satisfied. It can't get satisfied because you're not God. So I need a peace that surpasses my understanding. A peace that can only come and only be God Himself coming upon me. So I can breathe when my world is falling apart. I can breathe when everything seems to be crumbling around me. I can, and it's not that I'm stoic. It's not that I don't care. It's not that I don't have feelings. It's just I know God's got it. And even when I don't, He does. And even if I die, well, I'm with Him. So any way you look at it, I can just breathe. I don't like sin. I don't like sickness. I don't like death. I don't like pain and suffering. And I'm not trying to put down anybody going through those things. Paul just simply comes back and says, how are you thinking? Peter, you're thinking like a man. Paul says to the church, you want to think differently? Read with me. Verses 8 and 9. Philippians 4, 8 and 9. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. So what he says is, okay, here's what I got to do. I've got to inventory my mind. I've got to decide what goes into my head and then what I'm going to concentrate on that's in my head. So Paul says, you've got to change the way you think because you're thinking too humanistic. Think about the things that are true. Remember Pilate to Jesus? What is truth? Jesus basically says, me. Think about what is honorable, just, pure, lovely. Pick any of these that are up there. His point is, think on these things. You see, I changed my life. It doesn't make me an optimist. So I'm not, by the way. So that's just not my inner being is not an optimist. I am Eeyore through and through. Okay, I'm a positive optimist or pessimistic optimist. That's what I am. I'm a pessimistic optimist. Murphy's Law. Anybody remember Murphy's Law? Anything that can go wrong, will. Okay, that's a summary of it. Okay, if anything can go wrong, it will go wrong. Okay. Paul says, you got to change the way you think. Because your thinking isn't coming from God. So when I start filling my head with the good, when I start filling my mind with that which is true and noble and just, that is excellent, that is praiseworthy, I'm telling you, I am happier when I do that. Just being honest with you. I'm a little nicer to be around because I'm thinking pretty positive thoughts. And it's not pie-in-the-sky optimism. That's not what he is saying. What he's saying is, think of things from a God perspective. I have one question. Are you saved? If the answer is yes, then everything else doesn't matter. Okay? Everything else doesn't matter. If you are saved, are you going to have bad days? Yep. Are you going to have terrible days? Yep. Are you going to have days that you wish you were in Australia if you ever read that kid's book? Yes, you will. Okay? But when my mind is about what's on above, it changes me. I think less of me and more of him. I think less of my circumstances and more of his power. When Paul talked to the church in Corinth, he told them about his thorn in the flesh. And he said that he prayed to God three times for it to be removed. I've always smiled when I've read that passage. Because I want to say to Paul, three, come on. I prayed like a million times for God to remove my stuff. So I prayed three times for him to Paul's statement is, I'm so confident when I turn something over to God in prayer, I let it go. But yet, this thorn in the flesh was so difficult for me. Letting it go was not easy for me to do. So I prayed a second time and a third time. And he says, and the Lord said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. Paul's response, I'll glory in my weakness. You see, Paul had to change the way he thought. Paul was all about this thorn in the flesh. He was all about the physical. He was all about what was going on in his life at the moment, and it was consuming him. And Jesus had to step in and say, I've got you covered. My grace is good enough. Don't get wrapped up in your weakness, because my power is made perfect. So Paul's response, then I come to Jesus just as I am. I come broken. I need to be mended. I come just me. And all I want to think about is you. And that's when Jesus steps in and says, you finally got it. You finally got it. Think about that which is true and just and pure and lovely, excellent and praiseworthy. Put that in your head, and God's peace will be with you. Maybe you're here today and you've struggled, like so many people have, with the fear and the anxiety and the difficulties of life. And that's not an unusual thing. Can I just say to you, Jesus loves you. This I know, for the Bible tells me so. Will you come to Him just as you are and let His peace surround you? If we can help you to do that, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?